Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
What do you mean?
11.
Friends don't lie.
Stop it! You're freaking her out!
She's freaking me out!
The upside down.
Do you understand what he's talking about?
No.
I found the chocolate bunny!
Oh God, please tell me it's not the kid.
I need you to hide!
Warnings are for coffee and contemplation.
Holy shit.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is a very somber Streaming Things, the unofficial Stranger Things podcast. We have just finished, mere moments ago, Chapter 6, The Dive, and we're about to talk about it. A few business things right up front.
Right at the top.
I'm going to get right through them because I'm going to get to crying real quick because it's almost over, our little journey here, our binge fest, our hanging out, our dude bro watchathon. The recap extravaganza. I don't have any other synonyms, but it's almost over. We have one episode left, and then we got to wait a month, which isn't that long compared to the 3+ years we just waited.
But it's a little cruel. It's a little twist of the knife.
It is. It's like, hey, I'm going to tease you a little bit. Yeah, I'm going to play with it, but that's it.
Just the tip.
No finito. We're not going to do this to completion.
No.
You can email the show at any time, and we very, very much like it when you do that by writing into streamingthingspod@gmail.com. That's streamingthingspod@gmail.com. The pod is short for podcast.
What?
Yep. It's time we let everybody know. We've had our own little mystery in our email the entire time.
Everyone was always like, guys, what's the pod stand for at the end?
Now they know.
Are you pod people? Do you live in pods? Do you like bean pods?
All right, does it have something to do with your equestrianism?
Pod racer?
Ooh,
wizard.
You can also join our Patreon. Subscribe to it by going to patreon.com/streamingthings and paying, I don't know, was it $1, $5, or $10 a month for various rewards. And the $5 tier and above, you get privy to extra episodes and content where we cover other TV shows and properties and drop special Stranger Things things like we just did. Very recently, if you want to hear Steve's extravaganza of Dungeons and Dragons trivia mixture that he worked for weeks on, it's a wonderful thing to do.
I'll give you a little hint. The title of the campaign they went on was called Strange Things.
Damn, that was clever.
When the The fate of reality and time hangs in the balance of things most trivial.
Your D&D game had a couple of, you know, plot guesses for Stranger Things 4 accidentally.
Seemingly,
at least
yeah.
One. At least
yeah.
One.
There's a couple things in there. It's like, God damn, was that?
Did you write the season?
Did I mind walk myself into the Duffer's writing room a couple years ago? And
you did. You're actually somewhere else in a flotation tank right now, reliving watching Stranger Things 4.
Papa?
It's weird.
Papa?
Papa? Daddy? That's what he calls me. It's weird when he's in his trance.
Get back in there.
Get back in there. Yeah, we just, we're having a doozy of a time here. Doozy of a time. But anyway, moving on, real quick, before we get in, one last thing. The most important thing of all, some would say. is the Stranger Things Mad Lib. Steve laid on us.
Mad Libs!
It's so mad!
And they're here! The title of this episode's Mad Libs is none other than Meet the Monsters.
Dang.
First up, I need a silly word.
Andy, you're the silly word king.
Let's go with...
Never top flibbity jibbity.
Who's flibbity jibbits, sir? let's go with Kalamazoo.
The city in Michigan?
Is that really a city in Michigan?
Yeah.
No, but it's a funny word.
It is a funny word.
Shout out to all our listeners in Kalamazoo.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys.
Noun.
Salt.
Verb ending in ing.
Prancing.
Adjective.
Furry.
A place.
Liechtenstein.
I hear it's nice there this time of year.
Do you?
Oh, I should have said Valhalla.
Oh, that would have been pretty cool.
Change it to Valhalla.
Do you want to change it to Valhalla?
Yes, always, whenever possible.
Valhalla. Noun.
Driftwood.
Part of the body.
Epidermis.
Adjective.
Bloody.
Noun.
Fart.
Number.
Two.
Plural noun.
Condoms.
Condoms.
A condom? Do you have a condom?
I'm looking for a rubber.
A jimmy.
Animal plural.
Kangaroos.
Do you eat kangaroos for breakfast?
Mike Wheeler here. Adjective.
AV club.
Artificial?
Yeah. Sure.
Coming in hot with artificial. Verb.
Cleanse.
Plural noun.
Didgeridoos.
Didgeridie?
Didgeridoo.
An Australian 80s movie. You're about to didgeridie.
Something alive.
Something alive?
Yeah, it just says something alive. Oh,
pick anything that is alive.
Yeah.
Pearl Tupac. Jam.
What did you say, Andy?
Tupac.
Well, one of those is not alive. Are we going with Pearl Jam?
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, some people theorize Tupac and Elvis are alive somewhere.
Hey, man. That's exactly what we need to do.
It has everything to do with us.
The assassination of Martin Luther King happened to me.
Yeah, everything to do with us.
That movie's going to be hot garbage. But stay tuned to the end of the episode where you can hear what these two guys have helped create in the story. That is Meet the Monsters.
But that's for later. For now, let's dive into Chapter 6, The Dive, which Netflix describes thusly. Behind the Iron Curtain, a risky rescue mission gets underway. The California crew seeks help from a hacker. Steve takes one for the team.
You're right, I did.
Does it say that in the...
Yeah.
Wow. Christ, spoilers.
Right. Overall thoughts, what'd you guys think of episode 6?
I loved it. It probably is my favorite episode of this season.
Really?
It's so much fun. It was so fun.
That's true. The fun
it
wise.
Was
the fun factor.
So fun. And that's why I love season 3 so much. And that's the only, this season's been wonderful so far. It just, it is not hitting the fun factor that 3 had, but this was a fun episode and I had a great time with it.
Yeah, hard agree. This is so much fun. I think 4 might still be my favorite episode, but this is definitely like a close second.
This is the most that we've laughed.
Yeah. Episode 4 had the emotional beats and the drama that really kind of sucked you in, but this one was just such a hoot. You know what I mean?
It was a hoot.
It had a lot of great fun character moments. You got a lot of good team ups. You got a lot of great mystery added. You got a lot of great new wrinkles added to the Hawkins side of the story. And we got to meet... it's almost like meeting a new friend because it's a character we haven't really spent a lot of time with, and we really got to see a lot more of that person, and it was a lot of fun to be around.
Cornelius?
Yeah.
Talking about Susie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is bittersweet for me, guys, because we're almost done with part one, but not only that, I was, as funny as that is that I'm sad that we're almost done, I'm also sad that we had to stop watching. Very upsetting, because we have... As we record this, we still have to watch Chapter 7, in which most of the world has already seen all of them. And I'm just distraught, wanting to know the rest of the story. And also, let me share this with the listeners. I run a decent-sized TikTok account, we'll say, at Movies Are Therapy. And I make Stranger Things videos pretty often, as you can imagine, because I love the show so much. And I knew this would happen eventually, the bigger I got. Andy's been waiting with foreboding, warning me of this. Last night, somebody commented a spoiler on my Stranger Things video on purpose, just to be a dick, right? Like, all he said was the spoiler. It was no hello or anything like that. It was clearly a sabotage.
Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Exactly. Period. Of that nature. If it is true, it is of that size. And I was just like, wow, what a douche. And the closer we get to seven, you know, the more obviously I, even if it's not real, they've ruined some of my experience because I'm just thinking about it constantly. Like, could this get to that point? Da, 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 da. And at the end of this episode, I had to admit to myself, it could. I could easily see that happening. And I'm very upset right now because I was still holding out that that was just some nonsense that some kid was messing around with, you know.
I remember that reminds me when Game of Thrones season 8 was coming out. You guys remember like the whole like story of that show leaked online like a month before it came out. And I remember my ex at the time, she read the spoilers because she's that type of person. She needs to know. And we were watching an episode and she was seemingly upset. And I was like, hey, what's wrong? Wasn't that episode good? She's like, no, I think it's going to be this. And she explained the spoilers to me.
And having already known what the spoilers are?
Yeah, well, first she's like, I don't want to spoil it for him. I'm like, no, it's fine. I want to know why you're upset. And so she told it to me, and it was so outlandish. I'm like, they're fucking ribbing you, sweetheart. Don't worry about it. That's so not going to happen. Don't you're worried about nothing. And then, you know, six episodes later, it was a completely true.
Yeah, and then fast forward it like three seasons into that nonsense.
And
yeah.
I could just watch her the entire time we watched Game of Thrones just getting madder and madder and madder. So, like, I'm really sorry you had to go through that, man. And hopefully it's not true. We don't know for sure yet.
Yeah, I'll find out here after we're done recording this episode. But, yeah, so overall, I agree with you guys. I think it was a great episode. We're really ramping up. I have a feeling that seven is going to be insane. And I'm super looking forward to that. But let's dive right in and recap real quick so we can get to watching. It opens with the Cappers, see? You know, they're interviewing Jason. They find Jason holding Patrick's mangled, twisted body, which we can only assume he swam to shore holding it, which is good on him for that because I was not going to, I'm not touching that thing.
Some weird shit happened to those bodies, man.
Jason's a beast for that one. And, you know, interviewed by who I call the Dum Dums, who one of them is now the Chief Powell, you say? Chief
Powell.
What's the sociopath's name? Do we know?
Callahan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Powell and Callahan. And then it pans down in the water and we see one of those upside down Vecna tentacles grab a fish, which is our first clue that there's a gate in the water.
Ha, gotcha fish.
And he likes fish. I guess the fish feel guilty and he has a lot to feed on. Actually, that's dumb. What's going on? Maybe it's not Vecna's tentacles. It's the upside down tentacles. And so like the Demobats are eating the fish and stuff, maybe.
Carp, your suffering is at an end.
Carpe diem.
Trout.
You don't want to be with the other school of fish, do you?
Yes, you are isolated.
No, maybe there's like the upside down tentacle is bringing food in for the Demobats.
You're tired of feeding upon anemone. Yeah, because even Vecna can't say that.
The weird spiky bullshit.
So anyway, that's what's going on. And we cut to Lieutenant Colonel What's-His-Face torturing the G-Man. We find out his name is Mr. Wallace, trying to find the location of 11. We can assume he does crack, but at least he's holding out. I take back everything I said about him last episode.
I don't know if he's cracked yet. He had not cracked by the end of the scene he was in.
Right, but I mean, like, writing-wise, he has to eventually crack for the Jonathan team to converge on the bunker at the same time as the bad government and for there to be a finale-esque conflict, right?
Yeah, last episode we were like, oh, this guy's going to totally snitch. He's going to spill his guts out. And he hasn't.
No, he's tough.
He's holding the secret.
Are they hotboxing him? They're making those lamps heat up the metal that he has.
I guess.
It's not big enough for him to not touch the sides and he has to get in there. That's pretty vindictive.
That's hardcore, man.
And if you're not hardcore. And we cut to more 11 and Brenner. That's a thread throughout this whole episode. There's not much to say other than that she seems to have to play out her memories as a little girl. Or if she goes outside of that, it starts over. I mean, we've seen that in other things. I'm not sure what that's a reference to, but it's something. But she has to play it out.
This is when he sits her down in her office and shows her the tapes and everything, right?
Yes. I think so. And like the actual security footage of back then of 1970, September 4th, 1979, I think.
We're going to have a nice and lovely
movie night.
Daughter Papa movie night. I'll pick the movie. It's the day you killed 10. You harlot.
And then we cut back to the gang pondering how to break the news to Eddie that they're no closer, well, slightly closer, but still very far away from destroying Vecna and freeing his good name, which, by the way, that's not how justice system works. Like, I agree you have to kill Vecna. However, you're going to need another way of freeing Eddie. Maybe witnesses saying that you were with Eddie when Fred died. And you know what I mean? Which is true. That is how the justice system works. But I understand that could take 9 months. We don't have time for that. We got to kill Vecna. You hide in the woods. And so they find Eddie. He steals a walkie-talkie from a construction worker, and he hikes up to Skull Rock where the kids make out. And then radios in and says, I'm at Skull Rock. And so they go to meet him there. And then over with the other gang, Jonathan and Argyle and the boys, they got to head out to Salt Lake City because they need a hacker still. What's that? What's up? What's Giggly Boy?
I just know what's coming.
Oh, yeah. And that's where we get Susie's house, who are apparently a bunch of Mormons, except for the rebellious teenage oldest one, Eden, who Argyle is immediately smitten with.
I would argue the only Mormon in that house is Susie and her dad.
Everyone
else in this house, there is something happening here.
All the
savages. And I want to know what's at. It's so fucking funny. They ring the doorbell, and the person opening it is this little kid named Cornelius who answers the door by going, ah! And shooting them with an arrow.
Right in the forehead.
There are two other kids sword fighting.
There's like a little Wes Anderson kid.
Yeah.
And the wannabe actress sister, who's actually decent.
Who's coaching Tabitha, like, yeah, that's real nice, Tabitha. And then these strangers walk into their house. They're like, oh, you're ruining my take, guys.
Yeah. He's the director.
There's a couple of kids that are cooking. They're like, less salt, less salt.
It's just, father's kidneys.
Yeah. It's
where's chaos. The mother? Maybe there isn't one.
I don't know.
Single father?
God help that man if he's
oh, he's clearly stressed.
She might have died in childbirth after like the 700th child because there's a million of them.
Dark. Around. Yeah, but that's what's Mormon about it is that there's so many kids, right? Yeah.
Right.
And then Susie's just on the roof installing a satellite, as you do.
And we also meet Eden. Don't forget Eden.
That's what I was saying. I mentioned Eden. But yeah, she's awesome.
But like Argyle sees her and he's immediately smitten. She's like, hi, I'm Eden. He's like the garden.
I would do anything for you. Yeah, because if you see Susie, give her a push.
I'll push it for you.
That's the spinoff I want to see is the Susie family, right?
Yeah.
There's the spinoff.
Yeah. Just Cornelius. I want to see a whole show about him.
This is such an...
it's like a Mormon Shameless / Malcolm in the Middle. Like, I'm here for it. Whatever it is. It was awesome. Endlessly entertaining.
This is such an amazing subversion of expectations because you have this expectation of Susie and what her whole deal is. Like I would never have guessed that Susie has 900 siblings and all of them are completely different. She's got Wes Anderson. She's got the cooking twins. She's got the sword fighting twins and fucking Cornelius. Who's like, I know two things in this world. I know three things in this world. I know how to scream. I know how to
flip the breaker,
and I know how to put face paint on because I'm always at war with everyone around me.
Cornelius is awesome. That's a young Daniel Day-Lewis. I think that's what I'm convinced. That house was a bucket of fun. Awesome. And a huge subversion because they're coming up to the door quietly and they're like,
she's hey, super religious.
Super religious. You just act right, Argyle. Okay. And then we cut back to Yuri tied to the tree by Hopper and Murray. And they basically, long story short, tell him, hey, we're going to fucking leave you on this tree. And that bear you were joking about in a couple episodes ago, that's really going to come and eat you unless you show us where the prison is. And he's like, you know what? That's a decent idea. I'll show you where the prison is.
I like how he tries to negotiate first. Like, if you want me to show you where to go, 40,000. And
I'm glad Murray was fucking with him because I was like, what is going on right now? He clearly can't be trusted.
Yeah, and you can just literally leave his ass, dump his ass, as Levin would say.
Dump your ass, Yuri. We cut back to Hopper's little Demogorgon scare. The guards take him out, walk him through the courtyard where they feed people to Demogorgons, or at least the one, and into a feast, what I later dubbed the Last Supper. Because apparently they take six prisoners every now and then, and they fatten them up nice and good, and they feed them to the Demogorgon. And Hopper, even though he doesn't speak much Russian, speaks a lot more than I thought in this scene.
He was understanding what was going on, and he was like, well, all of your theories, they're wrong.
He's like wasted, and he's like, I've been listening to the Russian the whole time. Thought I was passed out over here. Well, I wasn't.
Yet.
Mm-mm.
I really like this scene, the Last Supper scene, because you get that really fun, not fun, but it's an interesting scene with all the Russian guys who are like, we can do this, guys.
You talk about Game of Thrones lighting. What about this scene?
Oh, yeah. They're like, light those candles and that's
it, baby. I expected Tyrion the Emp to pop out at any moment.
I am the god of tits and wine.
Bow, you shits.
Oh, if Bobby B came in here.
Bobby B.
Bow, you shits. But yeah, I liked how the Russians.
I love this scene. Spoiler alert, this is on my puddings. I loved it.
Oh, mine too.
Yeah, well, pudding bros.
Yeah, they're kind of like banding together, and they put their hands together and like, go Team Russia. And they're getting all like, you know, team building. They're doing icebreakers, doing trust falls. You know, they're really kind of trying to get this team together. And Hopper's like, it's called a Demogorgon. It's 9 feet tall. It's pale white. It's got the no face. It's going to tear everyone apart and start to bust your parade, but I'm going to enjoy this vodka.
I'm getting drizznunk before we die. And then we cut back to Eleven and her memories playing Plinko, which is at least the game on Price is Right. That's like that. I'm not sure what else it is. Droppy the disky on the pennies. I don't know what
That's what they call it.
Okay.
Droppy the disky on the pennies.
What's up with this orderly? That's a huge thing we got to talk about. We paused the episode to talk about it. He's the one that's really helping her with her powers. My theory is that he is number one. Mm-hmm. He has psychic abilities. He's not supposed to do the things that he's doing, like helping Eleven and stuff for some reason, because he got like cattle prodded later for that. Yeah, I think he is number one. And the fact that Eleven murdered all the other kids is different than we see it. I think that she was more of her defending herself is now what I'm convinced of than we got to see. Maybe not even her alone that did it at all. Either that or he manipulated her in some way. I'm not sure. But I am convinced that the orderly is number one.
He could be powers. Number one. He could also be like being influenced by Vecna in the past. We don't know how far back Vecna goes, but we know he definitely did something in the 50s. So
I'm leaning more towards he's manipulating Eleven, because there's that part where the reason she's able to later on in the episode beat two, he kind of tells her, hey, you know how he is able to do that? He thinks of a painful memory, and that's how he can.
Which is how Kali trained her as well. It's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so he clearly knows more than he's letting on, and he's obviously not supposed to influence these kids in any way. That's why they kind of torture him later on in the episode. But I wonder if this is like this guy's got his own sort of grand revenge agenda or something towards Dr. Brenner, and he's the one that kind of pops off Eleven in some way. So
I think so. It's at least that. It might be something supernatural, but it's at least that. But yeah, he told her the truth about what's really going on around there a little bit. Sometimes Papa lies. Anywhoozle. And then we cut back there to the gang heading to Skull Rock. And we find out that Dustin's compass is acting wacky, but it's in a fun little scene where, you know, Steve's always trying to be right because Dustin, he's fed up with Dustin's shit because they're actually best friends. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, can't admit that you're wrong. It's this way. I'm the one that invented making out at Skull Rock. And he heads in the correct direction. And the reason Dustin's so upset is because it was supposed to be north. And I understand that you're correct, Steve. However, compasses aren't wrong unless. And so he goes to figure that out. And that's a good scene.
Yeah. I love that character moment between the two of them, because you can tell they're still friends. It's that type of way where he's like, no, I'm not wrong. I'm not going to be showed up by this idiot like that. That's the type of thing you do with your friends, you know? Yeah. And speaking of friends, there was a nice little touching scene where Robin and Nancy were like, are we friends officially? Like, I know you were kind of annoyed by me for a while, but are we really friends? And Nancy's like, yeah. Why not?
She's confessing about Jonathan. And do you think there's any sort of like romantic tension between Robin and Nancy? Or am I just reading into that because I know that Robin is gay?
I have not picked up any romantic tension between the two of them. No.
Well, I mean, there's just a lot with Nancy as the nexus. And it's interesting to me because Nancy has obviously Nancy and Jonathan, but she still has a thing slightly for Steve, which is okay. I have gray areas. I understand that she could have feelings for both. That's not a big deal to me. But then there's this thing with her and Robin. And I'm like, interesting.
I think there is feelings, but only on Robin's end.
Right. I was saying there's something.
There's a scene later on in the show where it mirrors what kind of Robin told Steve in the first in season three, where she's looking at Nancy and Nancy's looking at Steve and like, oh, he took his shirt off. Oh my. And I don't know if I read that right, but I kind of got that. That's what I thought of immediately was that scene when she was kind of saying she was jealous of Steve because the girl she liked was looking at him and not her.
That wasn't how I read that at all. I read that as like a little vindication for herself. She was like, you are totally still into him.
And I think that's true as well. Cause she does say, I'd want my friends to be happy. Meaning because Robin's kind of pushing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You know, Nancy, hey, you and Steve.
And I always thought that that was what the season was leaning toward, like harping on how Steve really just can't seem to be happy with any of these women that he's with. He's looking for Nancy. You know what I mean? He's trying to find the Nancy in all of them. And there ain't no Nancy there. Nancy's in Nancy.
We need the Nancy of all of it.
And then there's also a scene, another scene about Lucas talking to Max. And, another sweet little scene with them. So that's cool.
Do Lucas and Max are just crushing it.
Power couple.
Yeah, they are. Like, I remember when they first got together, what was that, season two?
Yes.
And it was kind of like, oh, this is fun. Lucas needs a girlfriend. And then season three, it's like, oh, they're kind of pick on everybody. But this is a scene, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm totally on team
Lax. Shipping, as the kids say?
I'm shipping Lax, all right?
Lax.
Give me
it's
better
Lax. Than mucus.
Yeah.
That's their power couple
That's
name.
Awesome. Mucus.
And then we cut back to Jason at the town hall meeting. Somebody gave him another fucking microphone and he manages to rile up the entire town on a witch hunt.
Who's giving this guy microphones?
I don't know.
And why do they like let him like, oh yeah, go ahead. As someone who used to film town hall meetings.
Like the cops are there like, we'd like to stop him, but he's got the microphone. What are we going to do?
As someone who has filmed town hall meetings, if one of these neckbeard people would show up and touch the mic, I would immediately hop up. No.
But Steve, the Jason cannot be stopped. If they took that microphone from him, he would pull his backup out of his pocket and continue on.
He's got a lav mic.
He's got a battery operated wireless. He's like, I just got this at Radio Shack.
Bought it from Bob Newby. Aww.
This scene was wild. This when the scene started, Chris, you were like, oh, here comes his Hitler moment.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fabulous orator, but to nefarious ends is what I mean by that. So, yeah, he riles up the entire town against a bunch of D&D kids, you know, and the parents of those D&D kids band together and they have their own little town hall meeting. We got to find our kids first. That's neat. Everybody there is awesome, except for fucking Ted.
It is great. That's the first time we've seen the parents be involved in this plot at all.
Sure.
And other than, well, I guess with
Karen's been Karen, in and out a little involved. Bit, yeah. But Karen's a smoke show too.
Yeah.
Every season
that she get has just this wonderful hair this season.
Aging like wine. Yeah. Maybe it's just the hair that sets it off. I just want to throw that out there. I didn't even mean to say that out loud.
I just love the idea of the parents teaming up and having their own Stranger Things adventures, like Stranger Things, middle-aged edition. Like and Eric is here too. You know,
Yeah.
The parents are like, it's happening again. They dealt with all this in the past and they tried to bury it.
It's
not going to be the case, but that would have been fun.
Yeah, there's a flashback when they were all like 10 and 12 and Karen's like, come on, guys. We got to find out what Victor Creel's up to.
Language. Yes. Yes.
No. Well, this is Ted in his younger years. He'd be like, yeah, let's get that motherfucker.
Yeah. Ted's like really spry and lively. He's the Steve Harrington of the group.
Exactly. It's like the dad in Paddington that was like this badass when he was young.
Yeah.
So we cut back to Salt Lake City, and there's this weird little moment where you think that they've indoctrinated Susie into their upside down knowledge and all the supernatural stuff. She's like, you can't possibly expect me to believe all of this. And they're like, it's true. And I'm like, no way. And I love that the show does that. It constantly surprises me to the good, where I'm like, okay, this is too much. You can't just sit down off screen and tell another brilliant person everything that happened and have me expect that they believe it. And then all of a sudden she's like, so there's a new video game system, 16 bits. And I've realized that they've lied to her, and I'm like, oh, okay. Thank God.
American Nintendo.
American Nintendo, I think. American Nintendo. Argyle's genius name. Mm-hmm. American Nintendo. And Mike's like trying to salvage it. Yeah. Terrible name. However, so 2 months, 4 days and 5 hours from now is Dusty Bun's birthday. And they want to get that video game system for him is their cover.
American Nintendo.
And she realizes, yes, she can hack the phone number for them in magical 1980s internet ways. I don't understand how any of that happens. There wasn't really technically an internet yet. It was just accessible by, I don't know about stuff like that. Sure.
Maybe the Mormons had it.
Maybe they invented it.
The Mormons had it.
Maybe it's a very exclusive.
True. We don't know what those Mormons are up to.
You know, you don't know.
But her computer was confiscated by her father because she helped Dustin change his grades. And through her guilt to the Jesus, she had to tell her father about it. And so they have to hatch a little Ocean's 11 plan to go use the computer in the dad's study, helped along by the one and only warrior, Cornelius. Which is awesome.
You know, the dad was really disappointed in Susie because he's like, you are the one other Mormon in this house. Oh, my God. How could you do this? Sorry, I said, oh, my God. I said, I swear. And I love how Mike was censoring himself around Susie, too.
Oh, yeah. What
Holy
the
shit.
Heck? There's a moment where Mike looks at Susie and he's like, oh, can you print that? And she, quick as can be, looks at him and says, no, my skills end at IP geolocation. And Steve and Andy just laughing their buns off.
That may have been the funniest line all season. No, my skills end in
IP. Then they walk outside and Susie goes, we must have spooked a skunk, because Argyle's blazing the mystery machine out with
hot boxing with Eden.
With Eden. Awesome. He's like, what's up, my dudes?
I love how Susie looks. She doesn't do this because she's not Catholic, but she does the whole like she basically, you could see the, oh, heavens, and do like the
cross form. But she's shocked by the marijuana usage, yeah, for sure.
Heavens.
When we go back to the other gang at Skull Rock, and we realize they figure out that there must be another gate. That's why the compass is being messed up. And they make a lot of Lord of the Rings metaphors about the burning of the Shire. And it makes so much sense that I love this moment because that Eddie would be into this, because Lord of the Rings was a nerd thing, but Led Zeppelin was really into Lord of the Rings, right? And he's a rocker guy. And even though he loves D&D and he would love Lord of the Rings anyway, mm-hmm, he's double into it because I'm sure he's a giant Led Zeppelin fan.
Oh, for sure.
So anyway, that was fun.
I love that scene because there's the whole like into Mordor, and Eddie's like, yes, of course. And everyone follows through.
And then Sean Bean runs out and he's like, one does not simply.
No, Steve, as everyone's walking away, Steve's like, what's Mordor? Such. Of course, he doesn't know
what the fuck Mordor is. What the hell are you talking about? Burning of the Shire. And we cut back to 11 in the gang. And that's the scene Steve was talking about, where I called it battle bots, but
child fights.
Doctor. Yeah. It's like child fights. Buy your tickets now to child fights.
The reason why I videotape everything is I'm going to sell these fights online in a few years.
The Mormons have this thing called the internet.
I gave it to them. I invented it. If you ever heard of bum fights, you will. It's kind of like that, except it's children, and they fight with their minds. Some of them are as young as 3, going up against a seemingly 18-year-old boy.
2 is like 26, and he's just throwing this toddler against the wall like, ha-ha!
I love that visual of like the first fight, he slams an age-appropriate kid, 6, into the wall, and they're like, next up, it's 4, and it's like this 3-year-old kid.
I want to go home.
Daddy, I don't want to.
Pass.
Sorry, you can't pass. There's money writing on it.
Nobody bet on you. Get in there.
Who wants some of this action?
That's why they tased the orderly. He was like, God damn it, he cooked the books.
I had $30 on that, you bastard. Nobody was betting on 11. And we cut back to the plan that, so they get to the church and talking about Murray and Joyce and Yuri, and they, you know, found the peanut butter that Hop was eating and all that stuff, but they don't know that's what it was. And they all decide that they're going to walk into the prison, Kamchatka, or Kombucha, as Steve likes to say. And their plan is that Murray is going to act like he's Yuri, which is brilliant because he can speak Russian fluently, and that Yuri is going to be gagged and play Murray. And if you're confused, there's no big deal. I understand because it's very similar names. And yeah, they're going to bust Hop out.
I just want to kind of step back for a second and just acknowledge how wild it is that in season one, Winona Ryder played Joyce Byers, small town mom whose boy just goes missing, and she's just trying to find her boy. And by season four, she's on Russian espionage, spy mission with Murray fucking Bauman, surviving plane crashes and trudging through the blizzard.
But like not in a way where like, where have we gotten, right? Like this show's right off the rails. It's just like somehow a natural progression.
Yeah, which is so bonkers that it's working. You know?
Yeah, for sure. I'm buying it for sure. They're selling it. I'm buying it right up. I want another order, please.
Yes, please.
Hopper's a genius is what I wrote down. And again, this is one of those things where it almost goes off the rails. But he basically hustles everybody while drunk into securing a lighter and some vodka so he can fight the Demogorgon with fire. But what I don't understand is I got the impression that they were then and there about to feed the six of them to the Demogorgon, right? Yeah. Not like the next day. And then Hopper starts this fake fight with Enzo that Enzo's not aware is fake. And he ends up tussling with a guard to steal his lighter. That's amazing that he's so brutish and strong, but also smart, but also nimble enough to get that lighter. Mm-hmm. But that's all well and good. But why then did they all just get thrown in the cage instead of fed to the Demogorgon? Was it never the intention to do it that night?
You know, I don't know why they, I think that they wanted, they had said that they wanted to use them as prey for the Demogorgon, and they want them to fight back because that's how you keep a predator interested in eating or whatever.
I bought all that. That was
and
good.
So maybe the fact that they wasted all of their fight on each other and the guards instead of on the Demogorgon, that's the best I can come up with.
Yeah, it's tenuous.
Yeah.
I was also wondering maybe they're not fat enough because they were saying how they need to get them fat and stuff. And maybe because they're prisoners who have been in this gulag for however many times, they're probably malnourished. So it's like, let's give them a couple good meals, fatten them up like a nice stuffed turkey.
I mean, the implication of the Last Supper was it was the Last Supper. You know, the guy said, hey, they walked in here. And as soon as they came out, that was it.
But that was on his first night there. So
he doesn't know how many times they went in there.
Those guards are just like, man, you fucking buzzkills ruined our good time.
We were going to feed you tonight. Now we're seepy.
God damn it. Come on, guys. I hear there's another episode of Child Fights on.
Yeah. And then we cut back to the gate in the lake. Everybody but Max, Dustin, and Lucas get on the little boat to go swim toward the gate, try to find it. And we'll cut there because it cuts quickly to the orderly that we talked about being tortured. And Eleven witnesses this, but doesn't comment on it when she comes out of her little vision coma. And then Two and his little buddies, I'm assuming 6, 8, 12, and 14, who fucking knows, Two in numbers, are bullying, physically bullying Eleven. And this is where I got my theory that maybe she's just defending herself in the brutal scene that we saw.
Some would say they're mentally bullying her.
Indeed. That's true. They're telekinetically beating her up.
I wrote this note down during the scene like, man, there's always bullies in a school. It doesn't matter if you're in a weird scientific rainbow room getting experimented on collectively. There's still going to be cliques, you know?
Absolutely.
And that's a shitty thing about school.
People just click up. There's Plinko kids. There's the... There's the top kids.
There's the kids that like
chess club over there.
There's chess club.
There's the kids that like move those little race cars with their mind, you know?
Yeah, those are the weirdos.
Yeah, we don't talk
about that. And there's the one with the magic eight ball that nobody talks to him.
Yeah, he's the teacher's pet. Nobody likes him.
Why is no one hanging out with 10?
He's the coolest kid here.
He's so funny. I'm always like, tell me a joke. And then he rattles his little eight ball and he doesn't tell me one, but I love to see him try.
You know, that only says eight things, right, 10?
Let's torture the orderly again.
That makes me laugh.
What's that punk ass up to? There was an interesting thing about when Eleven came out of her vision, because after she gets beat up, she sees like the quick flashes of all the kids being dead, right? And they wake her up and she's like, I know what happened. I killed them. I noticed that when she woke up, Owens is holding her hand. Like, he's being very supportive throughout this whole thing, which is so weird. And ever since that betrayal that he did to her, what was that last episode? Mm-hmm. They haven't really focused on him that much, like interacting with her, which is kind of a shame. I kind of want to have that moment where she's like, you hurt me. And he's like, I'm sorry, kid. I was in a diner, and when I'm in a diner, you know how I get.
You know how I am in my diners.
You know how I get. I get
halfway through the sandwich, and then I do crazy stuff.
Club specials were just flying all over the place.
all over the place.
Crazy.
And this is
how
where,
come you never ask me to come to the diner?
This is where
I'm free. I'd like to get out sometimes. I just hang out with children all day. It's weird.
And they fight.
No, we'll ask you.
Okay, let me put it in my crossword puzzle that you'll be here.
That's your calendar and crossword puzzle. I see.
Mm-hmm.
So then Steve takes his shirt off, as Steve alluded to earlier. Steve talking about Steve. Steve May was talking about Steve. What's Harrington. His name? Harrington. And then we get a funny scene. All right,
I'm shirtless.
Lucas is looking through the binoculars, and he says, hey, Steve's chest is really hairy. And then Dustin is like, I've been telling him he needs to shave that shit, which is already funny because that just indicates to how much they hang out.
He says the ladies love it.
And then Max comes out of nowhere. Let me see. And then there's a long take of her just staring through the binoculars.
Lucas's face where he's like, "Is you still going?
Yeah.
What's up?
What?" He doesn't quite dawn on him yet. And then so Steve dives in real deep, real good swimmer. I feel like he gets unnecessarily close to what is certainly the gate that he was down there to look for.
He touches it.
Yeah. Why touch it, man? Don't touch the gate. And then swims back up and then stays in the water because he hasn't seen Jaws enough times, apparently. Apparently.
Has he ever seen a gate?
Steve, I don't think so. Steve hasn't been in the Upside Down either.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
You have. Well, Steve has
Jonathan
been
and Nancy
in,
have.
In the tunnels. Well, that's sort of Upside Down-ish.
Yeah, it's in like season, halfway upside down.
Ish, but canonically, I think they only recognize that Hopper, Joyce,
Nancy has been in there.
Will and Nancy are the only ones that have canonically been in the Upside Down, officially.
Oh, yeah.
Because when I was doing the trivia search, that was one of the questions that I eliminated.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, the end of the episode, Steve getting ate to shit by demo bats in the Upside Down, presumably about to be rescued by Nancy, Eddie, and Robin. So now they're all four going to be in the Upside Down.
We hope.
And then Dustin got arrested, it looks like. So the other two got away.
Yeah, he definitely gets caught by Powell.
So that's where we're at. And that's where they fucking ended it. Like, hey, you better binge it, bitch. Hope you don't have a job. Thanks, Netflix.
Hope you don't have a podcast. You got to hop off the couch and go record.
Yeah, hopefully you're not nerds. And because of that little fucker on the internet, I can't really surmise much. But let's get right into our favorite moments. Andy, what is your number three?
Let's see.
Here. Favorite moment.
My number three was the episode. Coming into Susie's house, opening the door. Mike opens the door and Cornelius is standing there dressed up like Peter Pan as a warrior, the warrior Pan, and shoots him in the forehead with a bow. We see the kids fighting with swords standing on the table. It was just, it came out of left field and it was so funny. And Argyle's little moment with Eden was wonderful. It just that intro to what's this going to be like? This is this character that we had the best moment in season three. And let's see what it's going to be like at home. And they're just like, how bad shit can we make this? And it was wonderful.
Absolutely. Steve, what was your number three favorite moment?
My number three is a moment that I really, really liked. But I think I like it more than most people because of the possibility that this moment could bring. And that is the moment that the parents of the kids team up.
Oh, good one.
I love this because not only it addresses something that we've always kind of poked fun at with the show is that the parents
have no idea what's going on with their kids, and they seemingly have no agency in the story. They're just merely there to go language from time to time. And so when they're in the town hall meeting and they see the photo of the Hellfire Club and they realize their boys are in this club, and they know their boys aren't in a cult. They just play
My boy.
They just play D&D in the Wheeler's house. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when I think
everybody but Ted, who slightly suspects his children of being involved in this cult.
You guys, we're inching closer to that sacrificial moment for Ted. Just you wait.
I hope he goes all the way with that sacrifice. That's all I'm saying.
He better at this rate, because even in the moment when they teamed up, he was still the fucking nutsack of the team. You know what I mean? But there's that moment when they're in the town hall, and I think Dustin's mom looks over to Lucas's mom, and just there's that shared look of like, what the fuck's going on? These aren't our kids.
We gotta do something. Yeah.
There's a whole pitchfork and torches crowd leaving this town hall. They could definitely hurt their kids. They could really harm them. This is not the type of mob justice you want your kids to have anything to be a part of. And I love how the police are like,
We're gonna write you up. Go ahead, be on your permanent record.
You can do it. Yeah, they go to the Wheeler's house, and Ted's still munching on a fucking donut. Was that what it was?
Yeah, he had a couple of donuts from the town hall meeting.
Karen's like, don't put words in, or don't, our kids aren't murderers. He's like, don't put words in my mouth. That's what she does. Fucking bitch, always putting words in my mouth. Like, Ted, you suck. But yeah, that was my number three. I love the parents teaming up. Such a good idea.
When Ted gets eaten by a demo bat, that'll be my number one. When we do the puddings for the whole season, number one. My number three was Hopper and Enzo. There's a small moment after he reveals his plan with the lighter and the vodka, and there's this like manly appreciation on the part of Enzo, and they share this laugh. And there's to be honest, there's a lot of like, I love his character from Game of Thrones leaking into my love of that moment, right? But there's this like almost like a multiverse thing. We've been getting a lot of that in movies recently, right? And so like there's this multiverse of Hopper and one of my favorite characters from my actual favorite show of all time. And it's like, holy shit. But they just both laugh maniacally, and there's a camaraderie there. And
don't make me laugh. My ribs are broken.
It's bittersweet because I'm like, oh, they're making me like Enzo a lot, and he's becoming a really good friend of Hopper's. He's definitely going to die. He's
super dead.
But
he's going to be the quote unquote brand new character of the season that dies brutally, and we're all sad about it.
Yeah, he's the B of the episode. But yeah, that's my number three. Andy, what's your number two?
My number two is the moment where Max just lingers with the binoculars staring at Steve's chest hair. That was the hardest I laughed. Well, second hardest. My number one is the moment where I laughed the hardest.
Yeah.
But that was so funny. Just like in this moment of like, what's going to happen? Just to have this little moment of like, oh shit. Like that was so good. The comedic timing and what was otherwise the ramping up to what was going to be, you know, the craziness at the bottom of the lake. God, that was such good timing for that. And I loved it.
Masterclass in breaking the tension for sure. Steve, what was your number two?
My number two was the last meal with Hopper and the gang.
That's my number two as well.
Yeah, just a really well-directed scene. I liked
chewing the scenery.
Chewing Hopper. The scenery, yeah. All the actors who had speaking roles were just really kind of yucking it up. You know, they were doing a great job. I liked getting to see these Russian prisoners that have never talked before, but you can see them that they're people too. They have agency. They want to survive this. They're teaming up. And then just seeing Hopper, you know, as we're watching it, we don't know part of his plan is to pretend that he's drunk so he can steal the vodka and to plant the seeds for a fight later on so he could steal the lighter. But in that moment, it's just kind of cool to be like, man, Hopper knows what they're up against, and it don't look good, but I trust he has a plan. So but it was just a really fantastic scene all around.
Yeah, 100% agree. That was mine as well. Andy, which Susie scene was your number one?
My number one is, I wrote down just what the subtitle said, which is Cornelius Shrieks. It's when the gang has convinced Susie that they need help getting the Ameritendo. And she says, I really wish I could, but I confessed to my father and he took away my computer. And then the light shut off and you just hear a yell. And the subtitle says Cornelius Shrieks, just the timing of it. And they had
that's where they get the idea, right?
Yes. She's like, actually, you know, and so apparently this kid does that. Like, so he did that when they first introduced him. Like, he shoots Mike in the head, shrieks at him, runs through the house, goes and flips the breaker, and then Eden runs game like, God damn it, Cornelius, and flips the breaker. Well, the
funny part, too, is like the fire in the kitchen, the Cornelius running amok, all that stuff, the blood, all the fake blood all over Tabitha. It's all dialed up because the babysitter is Eden and she's smoking weed in the van with Argyle.
right.
So that's part of the fun of it.
But it was just that well, yeah, that's when they're letting the plan happen. Babysitter. I would have assumed that, well, I guess she's babysitter's sister, whatever.
Yeah.
But just the moment where they flip off again and you hear the shriek come from downstairs, I laughed for probably like 5 minutes straight. I'm sitting there just cracking up on the couch. We've moved well past it. And I start laughing harder because it's so funny. The timing, everything about that was amazing. And that kid has to flip that breaker like 50 times a day.
It reminded me of, like, I said Wes Anderson as the kid, as a director joke, but it's kind of a Wes Anderson scene in general.
Yeah.
Like, there's a Moonrise Kingdom element to that whole setup is awesome.
Serious absurdism. It's great. Yeah.
Steve, what's your number one?
That whole sequence is my number one as well. It was such a joy.
It's mine too.
Yeah, it's
specifically
so funny.
I think the introduction that Andy had is his number three, I think, is my number one, just because I didn't expect that at all.
Yeah.
But the whole Susie's family is definitely my number one.
And I love how they plant the seeds where they show all the sets of kids and what they do seemingly all the goddamn time. And so when the dad goes downstairs, like you said, Chris, all that shit's ramped up because Eden's not there. But like, the kitchen's literally on fire, and it's just seeing this poor man who's just like, "What? My kids are gonna kill themselves? What the hell?"
And then Susie's like, "Oh, Dad, you look tired.
You
need a nap."
Real quick, was Susie putting up a radio antenna on the roof to better communicate with Dustin?
Yeah, it's her cerebro.
Or was she taking it down because her dad made her?
I'm not sure.
She's just making some adjustments. She hasn't heard from Dusty in a while.
She said that her dad wouldn't let her date him anymore. She's like, I'll probably never see him again, but I would do anything for him.
Mm-hmm. And he took her computer. Because
he found out she was dating an agnostic.
Mm. An agnostic Andy.
Maybe she was moving it out onto the roof so he wouldn't know.
We can only hope. I don't think that's the last we've seen of Susie.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially when the writers see all the reactions online.
I would riot.
How successful that scene was.
Well, we know they listen to the show, so.
Yes, that's true. Hi, Duffers.
Hey, well, Duffer Bros.
Hi, Matt. I don't like you, Ross. You were rude at dinner. Mm. I've never met them. This is all a lie.
I was going to say, you holding out on me, bro?
Well, we have one last important thing to do before we go watch the finale of part one, which is weird to say. We have to finish our Mad Libs. See what monstrosity we have created. Dr. Frankenstein, read it to us.
Well, hey, real quick, Eggos. Already called out
Mordor
one. There's a Wizard of Oz poster in Susie's bedroom, and she also had Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy dolls.
Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy. Did you have any Eggos, Steve?
No. Hard no.
I didn't either. My beak. Way to go, Andy.
Yeah.
Raggedy Andy.
Way to go, something. Andy. Yeah, I was just too caught up in this episode to really pay attention to anything that wasn't, you know.
Susie's family. Got it.
Yeah.
Or Steve's bare chest.
Dude, his bare chest came out and I thought, oh my gosh, I want to get
Steve
lost.
Got out binoculars from his pocket. It was very strange.
I had those little tiny opera glasses, you know.
A monocle.
Dr. Frankenstein, drop that beat.
Sorry. So this episode's Mad Libs is titled Meet the Monsters. Let's see what Chris and Andy helped create this episode. If Frankenstein, Count Kalamazoo, and the Loch Ness Salt give you goosebumps, these monsters will leave you prancing with one eye open. Number one, the Mind Flayer. This furry creature is out for Valhalla domination.
Nice.
And blood. Its powers include possession, driftwood kinesis, and epidermis control. To name a terrifying few, that is kind of terrifying. Epidermis control?
For sure.
Ew, I'm stretching.
Number two, the Demogorgon. This bloody creature is half human, half fart. From far away, it appears faceless, but get close and you'll see its skin opening to reveal two sharp teeth. Just the two.
Number three, Demodog. This is one pet you won't be asking your condoms for.
For sure.
These young kangaroos are bigger than an artificial retriever and definitely won't sit or cleanse on command. No number of treats and didgeridoos can tame this Pearl Jam. And thus concludes.
Did Frankenstein really appear in the story?
It's Frankenstein. It's literally the second word. That's
so fucking weird.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Well, you helped write this, Chris.
That made it strange. Well, that's...
And Count Kalamazoo.
That's shout all out the time to we our have. Listeners in Kalamazoo, baby.
That's all the time we have. We're going to watch the finale of Stranger Things 4, Part 1. Thank you for tuning in. Stay tuned, though. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this was Streaming Things.
Hello and welcome back, everyone, to Child Fight. I'm Dr. Brenner, your MC, as it were. Dr. Death is how I like to be called on the show, and I'm here to tell you about our competitors of today. I would like to thank them for this Patreon tournament of death that I have planned out for them. They're going to fight each other.
By death, you mean blindfoldedly, mentally pushing one another.
Oh, hello, upside down me. It's good seeing you again.
Bernie Sanders here. I don't agree with the child fights. Oh. It's something that the 1%ers do.
Okay, hippie. First up, we have Phil taking on Carmelita head to head. My money's on Carmelita. Phil,
definitely put all my money on Carmelita. I mean, I didn't participate.
Why are you still here? Second up, we have Carrie taking on the Belgian brute, Enza. Which one of their mind powers would overcome the other? Tune in to find out. Next up, we have Cake taking on Katie. God help you, Katie, because no one can beat Cake. It's always tough to follow her. We always feel bad about it.
Can't defeat Cake.
It's even this guy knows. Even he gets.
She takes the bus every day. It's a bus full of cake.
I don't believe in public.
Everything to do with cake.
Who is this now?
Yeah,
I'm the king.
Oh, that's Andy's. I mean, that's Elvis.
Oh, I forgot. I invited Elvis Presley.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Next up, we have in our quarterfinals, we have Jimmy taking on Sarah. I really hope that.
Jimmy's going down.
Sarah will give Jimmy a terrible wound. We have Elo taking on Kyle in what will surely be a bloodbath. Thomas takes on Shay. Hey, the king, who do you have on that one?
It has everything to do with Shay.
Does that mean you're voting for Shay?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We have Stephen V taking on A. Wells. And a battle of wits. Who has the bigger brain? We'll see. Does Stephen V have 5 brains? Hopefully not. I'd like to experiment on all of them if he did. And in the, what do you call it? The bonus seed? How does March Madness work? When you don't face someone, you get an automatic pass to the next round. What's that called?
A bye.
In the bye round, we have our newest competitor, Danielle. Thank you so much to all these people for volunteering their time and money to participate in this week's episode of Child Fights live from my basement. And thank you, the King and Bernie Sanders, for also being here.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Vote for me.
Security, please get Bernie out of here particularly.
Get him away from me.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.